Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We are up to Book 15, Chapter 5, and it goes something like this. In 1812 and 1813, Kutuzov was openly accused of blundering. The Emperor was dissatisfied with him. And in a history recently written by order of the highest authorities, it is said that Kutuzov was a cunning court liar, frightened of the name of Napoleon, and that by his blunders at Krasnoye and the Berezina he deprived the Russian army of the glory of complete victory over the French. The footnote here says History of the Year 1812, the character of Kutuzov, and reflections on the unsatisfactory result of the battle at Krasnoye by Bogdanovich L.T. Such is the fate not of great men, grands hommes, when the Russian mind does not acknowledge, but of those rare and always solitary individuals who, discerning the will of Providence, submit their personal will to it. The hatred and contempt of the crowd punishes such men for discerning the higher laws. For Russian historians, strange and terrible to say, Napoleon, that most insignificant tool of history, who never anywhere, even in exile, showed human dignity, Napoleon is the object of adulation and enthusiasm. He is grand. But Kutuzov, the man who, from the beginning to the end of his activity in 1812, never once swerving by word or deed from Borodino to Vilna, presented an example, exceptional in history, of self-sacrifice and a present consciousness of the future importance of what was happening. Kutuzov seems to them something indefinite and pitiful, and when speaking of him and of the year 1812, they always seem a little ashamed. And yet it is difficult to imagine an historical character whose activity was so unswervingly directed to a single aim, and it would be difficult to imagine any aim more worthy or more consonant with the will of the whole people. Still more difficult would it be to find an instance in history of the aim of an historical personage being so completely accomplished as that to which all Kutuzov's efforts were directed in 1812. Kutuzov never talked of 40 centuries looking down from the pyramids, of the sacrifices he offered for the fatherland, or of what he intended to accomplish or had accomplished. In general, he said nothing about himself, adopted no pose, always appeared to be the simplest and most ordinary of men, and said the simplest and most ordinary things. He wrote letters to his daughters and to Madame de Stael, read novels, liked the society of pretty women, jested with generals, officers, and soldiers, and never contradicted those who tried to prove anything to him. When Count Rostopchin, at the Yorza Bridge, galloped up to Kutuzov with personal reproaches for having caused the destruction of Moscow, and said, "How was it you promised not to abandon Moscow without a battle?" Kutuzov replied, "And I shall not abandon Moscow without a battle," though Moscow was then already abandoned. When Arakcheev, coming to him from the Emperor, said that Ermolov ought to be appointed chief of the artillery, Kutuzov replied, "Yes, I was just saying so myself," though a moment before he had said quite the contrary. What did it matter to him, who then alone amid a senseless crowd understood the whole tremendous significance of what was happening? What did it matter to him whether Rostopchin attributed the calamities of Moscow to him or to himself? Still less could it matter to him who was appointed chief of the artillery. Not merely in these cases, but continually, did that old man, who by experience of life had reached the conviction that thoughts, and the words serving as their expression, are not what move people, use quite meaningless words that happened to enter his head. But that man, so heedless of his words, did not once, during the whole time of his activity, utter one word inconsistent with the single aim towards which he moved throughout the whole war. Obviously, in spite of himself, in very diverse circumstances, he repeatedly expressed his real thoughts with the bitter conviction that he would not be understood. Beginning with the Battle of Borodino, from which time his disagreement with those about him began, he alone said that the Battle of Borodino was a victory, and repeated this both verbally and in his dispatches and reports up to the time of his death. He alone said that the loss of Moscow is not the loss of Russia. In reply to Lauriston's proposal of peace, he said, "There can be no peace, for such is the people's will." He alone, during the retreat of the French, said that all our manoeuvres are useless, everything is being accomplished of itself, better than we could desire, that the enemy must be offered a golden bridge, that neither the Tarutino, the Vyazma, nor the Krasnoye battles were necessary, that we must keep some force to reach the frontier with, and that he would not sacrifice a single Russian for 10 Frenchmen. And this courtier, as he is described to us, who lies to Arakchiev to please the emperor, he alone, incurring thereby the emperor's displeasure, said in Vilna that to carry the war beyond the frontier is useless and harmful. Nor do words alone prove that only he understood the meaning of the events. His actions, without the smallest deviation, were all directed to one and the same threefold aim. 1. To brace all his strength for conflict with the French. 2. To defeat them. And 3. To drive them out of Russia, minimizing as far as possible the sufferings of our people and of our army. This procrastinator, Kutuzov, whose motto was patience and time, this enemy of decisive action, gave battle at Borodino, investing the preparations for it with unparalleled solemnity. This Kutuzov, who before the Battle of Austerlitz began, said that it would be lost, he alone, in contradiction to everyone else, declared till his death that Borodino was a victory, despite the assurance of generals that the battle was lost, and despite the fact that for an army to have to retire after winning a battle was unprecedented. He alone, during the whole retreat, insisted that battles which were useless then should not be fought, and that a new war should not be begun, nor the frontiers of Russia crossed. It is easy now to understand the significance of those events, if only we abstain from attributing to the activity of the mass aims that existed only in the heads of a dozen individuals, for the events and their results now lie before us. But how did that old man alone, in opposition to the general opinion, so truly discern the importance of the people's view of the events that in all his activity he was never once untrue to it? The source of that extraordinary power of penetrating the meaning of the events then occurring lay in the national feeling he possessed in full purity and strength. Only the recognition of the fact that he possessed this feeling caused the people, in so strange a manner, contrary to the Tsar's wish, to select him, an old man in disfavour, to be their representative in the national war. And only that feeling placed him on the highest human pedestal from which he, the commander-in-chief, devoted all his powers, not to slaying and destroying men, but to saving and showing pity on them. That simple, modest, and therefore truly great figure could not be cast in the false mould of a European hero, the supposed ruler of men that history has invented. To a lackey, no man can be great, for a lackey has his own conception of greatness. Alright, there we go, another chapter down, and the moderator of this discussion, Ernie Pook, seems very displeased with it. Ernie said, "In The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, we find that the entry for Earth in the guide simply reads, 'Harmless.' This chapter could be summarized as Skip. Ernie Pook goes on to ask, how many movie and television adaptations have included this chapter? Yeah, probably not many. Ernie Pook also asks, how did a story filled with adventure and romance become a treatise in defense of Kutuzov? And lastly, is this chapter even successful in its effort to defend Kutuzov? So Ernie Pook definitely didn't like this chapter. It wasn't the worst of the Tolstoy rants, the Tolstoy defending Kutuzov rants. There's been worse ones. De Fleury said, "Dear Uncle Leo, my book club tricked me into reading a book that I expected to be an epic romance slash adventure, but it turns out to be a biography of some boring old white man I've never even heard of before. Should I make like Napoleon and retreat? Signed, 89% done, and that's about 88% more patience and time than Kutuzov would have invested in this enormous work. Ouch." Well, first of all, Kutuzov doesn't have an end to his patience, so I think 88% is just scratching the surface. Kutuzov is endlessly patient. Also, he does love a good novel. He's always having a good read, and he does always seem to be reading something. Well, maybe I invented this, but I would imagine he would be reading something related to the situation he's in. He's reading not just as a pastime, but he's always trying to learn. So, hey, if he could get his hands on this book, well, geez, he'd have all the answers. Now, since you leveled that question at Dear Uncle Leo, I'll give you Leo's response as well. Leo would have said, all the variety, all the charm, all the beauty of life is made up of light and shadow. There you go. You got to take the good with the bad. You got to take the character chapters with the diatribe chapters. Ooh, diatribe. That's a good word for it, isn't it? I'm surprised that that's the first time I've used the word diatribe in this project. We're 322 days into this project, I think, or something around that. And that's the first time I've thought to use the word diatribe. Well, there you go. Diatribe. That's what this chapter was. Obi-Wan Spicoli said, I have not watched any TV or movie adaptations yet, but I plan to watch the recent BBC one after I finish the novel, and I'm looking forward to it. I've watched all but the last episode, which would be the episode where this chapter would be, so I can't actually answer the question if the BBC version would include this chapter or not, because that's the one bit I haven't watched. I watched up until the point where I caught up to where the book was, and then I didn't want to spoil it, so I stopped watching. But can you believe that 7 episodes pretty satisfactorily captures the first 700 pages of this book? Pretty impressive. Obi-Wan Spicoli also said, I was very moved by this chapter and the following one. Hey, reading ahead. I like Kutuzov as a character, and if the real man was anything like him, him too. Okay, cool. I don't think he'd be very fun to hang out with, but I do admire the man. Obi-Wan Spicoli said, in answer to the final question that Ernie Pook asked, is this chapter even successful in its efforts to defend Kutuzov? Of course it is. It shows him to be a very sympathetic character. He was a very brave man who was wounded twice in war. He knew the cost of war, probably lost friends. The line, he would not give up one Russian even for 10 Frenchmen, moved me. He isn't looking for commendations or land and titles. He just wants to preserve lives. Yeah. Yeah, that's it, isn't it? And it's not talking about killing. He wouldn't, sacrifice one Russian to kill 10. He's talking about capturing. So, I don't know. He's very selfless, isn't he? He's willing to be the, what's it called? For want of a better word, the punching bag, the scapegoat. He doesn't care how bad he looks. He knows what he's doing. He's saving Russian lives. He's defeating the French enough to get them the heck out of Russia. And beyond that, he's not losing any more lives. That's a win in his eyes. If he can get them out of his country, that's a defeat. Then the only objective past that is to not do anything unnecessary. Chatovalster said, "Thanks, Ernie, for taking over again. As I know Kutuzov only through Tolstoy's eyes, I've always liked his character. I also really enjoyed reading some compliments and arguments for Kutuzov. I unfortunately can't quote which one I found especially beautiful because I don't have my book with me at the moment." I didn't hate this chapter. Kutuzov, I really got a good sense of how self-sacrificing Kutuzov was. Kind of almost like a martyr. If that's the word. Later, Chatovalster said, "Now that I'm home again and have my book with me, I can look up the part which I found especially beautiful." This is a second comment, by the way, that Chatovalster left a little bit later. "It's the last three paragraphs of the chapter. I don't know if it's three paragraphs in every translation, so I'll quote the first part. Only the recognition of that feeling in him made the people choose him in such a strange way. Him, an old man in disgrace. ... Yeah, the chapter really did do a good job of putting me on Team Kutuzov. Brian E. Denton said, "I think you might really dislike the second epilogue. Very curious to see how you respond." Ooh, yeah, is the second epilogue more diatribing, is it? I think the epilogues I don't think the epilogues have character stuff in them at all. I think it's all this zoom out, broader perspective. So we might be dragging our heels through that. Obi-Wan Spicoli finally said, "I don't know anything about the real man, but I love Tolstoy's Kutuzov. It does make me want to know more about him. I wish all leaders, particularly military ones, thought like him." Agreed. He does seem like a very good person to have in your army, guiding, leading your army. Alright, that's going to do it for tonight. Thank you very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.